This is Daryl and Jeff. We like movies and music. Some people would even call us buffs, but we wouldn't go that far. First we'll talk about a movie, and later on we'll talk about a record. Sometimes we fight, but usually we don't fight too bad. Mostly we stay friends. Mostly we stay friends.
I think we got the wrong mic for you. There you go.
Oh, do you do that all the time?
I do it on purpose to make you upset.
You do it? Yeah. Hey, everybody. You're listening to 10 Things I Hate About You, Too. It's your most important host, Jeff Lott, and I'm sitting here with my insubordinate, Daryl Smith.
It would be subordinate.
What's insubordinate?
Like, what does insubordinate mean, or what would make me insubordinate?
Oh, it's not a verb, or it's not a noun?
Yeah, I don't think you can be I guess you could be
an... Is that a military term?
Insubordinate?
I don't know.
I don't know. Who cares? We're doing Pumping Iron this week.
I can't really hear myself.
Remember how you promised to do the... you were going to do the plot synopsis? You're like, I'm going to do the plot synopsis next week. Da-da-da-da. You ready to do it?
I'll do it.
Okay, go.
So, Pumping Iron is a docudrama.
Okay.
It's about bodybuilding. It was a very popular bodybuilding documentary. It took bodybuilding from a niche popularity into a gigantic what would be the word?
You're killing it, man. Keep going. You're murdering this.
You go. You're better.
Okay, so Pumping Iron is a documentary. It's got Arnold Schwarzenegger and Louis Ferrigno, or Lou Ferrigno, and the big
drama. Some people call him Louis.
Louis. And I think his dad calls him Louis a lot in the movie.
That's not even his real dad.
It's not his real dad?
It's actually just a robot.
Okay. So it's a documentary that centers around this competition, the Mr. Universe and the Mr. Olympia competitions that take place, I think, in this particular year in South Africa. I don't know if it's always in South Africa. And it sort of shows the training routines of Arnold and the training routine of Lou Ferrigno and a couple other sort of... Mike Katz was one name that I can remember. And a couple of the other bodybuilders, eventually they all go to South Africa to compete. And it's sort of the like New York tough style of Lou Ferrigno versus the laid-back Venice Beach style of Arnold Schwarzenegger and the calm collection of him. And then Arnie wins the whole thing and then retires from bodybuilding is the plot of the movie, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was going to say all that.
Yeah, you were. You were just going to say it. It was going to take the entire first half of the show you to get that out.
I'm not really quick like that. I get to think about it. I didn't really prepare.
The only thing you're quick at is nonsense. So if you just have to say something that doesn't matter, you're good. If you have to talk intelligently about a subject... That's where you fall apart. And that's why I'm here.
I'm sorry.
I wasn't listening. No, I'm Jeff.
No, it was a genuine apology.
No, it didn't. That makes me look like a really big jerk. But I know that it wasn't. But that's quick. That's good. That's what you're good at.
Can we address the purple elephant in the room?
You are dressed. You are wearing purple. It's maroon, but
it's also just red.
Keep going. What's the isn't it a white elephant? That's or a, just
that's
the elephant
second
in the room?
Fat joke you've said to me today.
I didn't make any joke to you about that. Keep going.
We've already been fighting before we started.
Yeah, twice. Two fights on the way over here.
We might just full blown fight by the end of this.
We are in closer proximity than we usually are. What were you going to say?
That's what I was going to say.
The elephant in the room. What's the elephant in the room?
That we've already fought before.
Oh, that we've already
fought.
Okay, who cares? Yeah, let it out. Pumping Iron, let's talk about this.
Hilarious.
Pretty funny. I'm going to play some of the funniest scenes in a minute. We're going to do the pumping up and then the C word scene that he uses a lot. We could probably say that. He's going to say it a lot, so we'll give some context before that happens. But this is the reverse of every documentary I've ever been trained to watch is the wrong word.
A docudrama.
But it's not even a docudrama. Hear me out here. The reason it's the reverse is because I feel like, so I'm thinking like, these are just coming off the top of my head, like Searching for Sugar Man.
Oh, right.
Okay. Or like any, basically every documentary is usually an underdog story, right? Not always, but.
Supersize Me.
Yeah. When have you seen a documentary that's like, this guy is clearly like, Arnold Schwarzenegger in this movie is the most self-assured, like, winner in every context of the word that I've ever seen in my life. And he's, like, manipulative, and he's really selfish, but in a sort of, like, really pure way. He just wants to be the best.
Yeah.
And he's going to do...
He's unapologetic.
He's unapologetically, like self-motivated and manipulative and, like, very cool and, like, the most... like cool self-confidence I've ever seen, where he's just like, I am the best and I'm always going to win because I can do that because I'm a winner. Mm-hmm. And then he wins.
Yeah.
And there's no,
and the other guy, what's the amateur one?
Mike Katz is the guy who loses, who's kind of the Lou Ferrigno of the undercard story.
Is that the Universe or Olympia?
That's Mr. Universe. Mr. Olympia is the professional one. But yeah, and the other guy's like, I'm a manipulative jerk who's going to win, and then manipulates and is a jerk and wins.
Yeah. The jerks just win.
Yeah, the jerks win. That's the story of this movie. The jerks and the people that think they're going to win and sort of feel most entitled to win, win.
There's not even like a moral victory for the other guys.
No. I guess Lou Ferrigno gets to go be the Hulk, but Arnie has like a much bigger acting career. Let's talk about the shirt Arnold is wearing at the end of the movie. So at the end of the movie, after Arnold has won, he's laying on a couch, smoking a joint, sipping wine with all the losers gathered around him, wearing a shirt that says Arnold is numero uno, that either someone made and brought or he made and brought himself with the sole intention of putting on after he won the contest that he knew he was going to win. And just wears.
I know you said you wanted a Daryl is numero uno shirt.
Yeah.
I just want an Arnold is numero uno shirt. I think that's a better shirt.
It's numero, not numero. But keep going.
I'm not even, you type and do your weird thing. We'll just have silence on air. Because there's been too many insults.
I'm just trying to get you to pronounce it correctly, man. That's not on me.
Numero.
Numero. Numero uno. It's not numero uno.
Are you even that sure that you're right on
that? I'm totally sure that I'm right. Where did I grow up?
I don't remember.
Los Angeles. Where do they speak a lot of Spanish? Los Angeles. It's numero uno. It's not numero uno. It sounds so weird. I am numero uno. Get out of here, man.
I can't stand you tonight.
Likewise. So we're going to play this quote from the movie. We got to give some context before we do it. Can you deliver that context? Oh, you're about to pick up your phone.
I don't remember what time we started.
Of course you don't. Fortunately, we have a timer. I would like to play this quote from the movie. It has sexual content in it, so be warned.
He says coming a lot.
He says coming a lot. But only about sex one-third of the time. The other time, it's about other things that make him come.
Yeah.
Yeah, go Arnold. So this is about a minute long, and it's got some sexual content. It's one of the best parts of Pumping Iron that we've watched. Okay, here you go. Oops, we gotta get it back right in the right spot here.
Satisfying feeling you can get in the gym is the pump. Let's say you train your biceps. Blood is rushing into your muscles, and that's what we call the pump. your muscles get a really tight feeling, like your skin is going to explode any minute. You know, it's really tight. It's like somebody blowing air into your muscle. It just blows up, and it feels different. It feels fantastic. It's as satisfying to me as coming is, you know, as having sex with a woman and coming. And so can you believe how much I am in heaven? I'm like getting the feeling of coming in the gym. I'm getting the feeling of coming at home. I'm getting the feeling of coming backstage when I pump up, when I pose out in front of 5,000 people. I get the same feeling. So I'm coming day and night. I mean, it's terrific, right? So, you know.
All right, how good is that?
I feel like we're verging on Howard Stern territory with this stuff.
Okay. I don't listen to Howard Stern enough to know how we're doing that, but is that the most ludicrous part of the movie? One of them, right?
It's a pretty good part.
Yeah.
Would you say that I'm more like Arnold Schwarzenegger and you're sort of...
Lou Ferrigno-esque?
No, I was going to say Mike Katz. You're not even Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah, I could deal with me, Mike Katz. I'm a nice father who used to be in the NFL, who a lovable loser.
Yeah, I'm just so great.
Yeah, you are so great.
Thanks.
Let's keep talking about this movie. What other things struck you besides Arnold Schwarzenegger's ridiculous analogy between blood flowing to your muscles and coming?
Well, if we talk about Mike Katz, his whole story is incredibly sad.
Yeah. So he was like this guy who used to get beat up in high school, has like cross eyes, and then decides to get super buff to like counteract that. And then goes to college and plays football, and then goes to the NFL and plays football, and then gets injured almost immediately, and then tries to become a bodybuilder, where he continues to lose for years and years and years.
I think sometimes he wins, but he's like a fan favorite, and they set up in this documentary, they sort of pitted this other guy against him, and this other guy is really manipulative, and he plans on stealing his t-shirt to psych him out, and then he does steal his t-shirt to
and it
psych
does psych him out.
And it does psych him out.
And he does lose.
And he does lose, and he's sitting backstage and he's talking about it like, oh, that's good for, you know, good
it's
for
just
him.
Like, imagine how that must feel.
It must feel so good. And he is clearly like devastated, but he's being like the best sport ever.
Yeah.
But there's two things about this. I watched the documentary Raw Iron.
Okay.
The making of Pumping Iron.
What did you learn from Raw Iron?
A bunch of things, but specifically to this, there's like a deleted scene where he just starts talking
about... Mike Katz
just starts talking about how every... Like, he's sitting there after he just lost, and he starts talking about how, oh, he can't wait to see his children, and that makes everything okay, but he still looks, like, super sad. It's heartbreaking. And the other thing is that those two guys are actually good friends.
Mike Katz and the guy who manipulates
him?
Yeah,
we should know that guy's name. What's that guy's name?
I can't remember. I'm not going to look it
the
up.
The other bodybuilder. Yeah. He basically is made to be the villain. And he does steal his t-shirt and stuff, but they were actually, like, really good friends. And
the movie makes them look more adversarial than they are.
Yeah. And Mike Katz goes on, and he does more bodybuilding, and he wins some, he loses some, and he has, like, all these gyms.
Does his
It changes all of their...
Does his hair get any better?
It just kind of goes back.
Back and back.
Yeah. But all of these guys' careers took off. Like, everybody who was in this movie, like, benefited hugely, except for the guy who hid the t-shirt. That guy, every time he tried to...
get into acting?
Every time he went to a bodybuilding competition after this movie came out, he would get booed.
Really?
So
because
bad.
Of the t-shirt steal?
T-shirt thing, yeah.
Kind of deserves it. Just going to say.
Yeah.
Arnold obviously had the biggest career out of this. How much do you think Arnold's career... Like, you can see how his career is just going to be, like... a mirror image of his bodybuilding career. Something like his acting career is the same thing. He's just charming enough and is just gonna be an actor.
Yeah.
And he's going to be in your action movie.
Yeah.
And he's gonna convince you that you need him in your action movie somehow.
Yeah.
And his like political career almost seems the same too. Like
He just wins.
So kind of, I don't want to be like he's just a winner and he wins and talk about him like he's Tim Tebow, but he sort of is that. Like, he just comes up and is the best. And
I'm going to be the best bodybuilder. He becomes the best bodybuilder for a long time. He's the best bodybuilder of all time.
I'm going to be the biggest action actor.
Yeah, of all time.
And he just is.
I'm going to marry into the Kennedys and become the governor. When he announced that he was going to be the governor of California, people laughed.
Yeah.
And he just became the governor of California.
He's kind of like the flip side Rob Ford.
Well, I don't know. Not yet. Rob Ford's still succeeding.
I guess I just mean it in the sense that he's like lovable and you want to love him and like yeah, I guess Rob Ford.
Don't think he's lovable.
Arnold?
Yeah.
I think everyone likes him a lot, even though you kind of hate him.
He's got a magnetism, but I don't like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You think he's kind of a jerk. So let's talk about the jerky things that come out of his personality in this movie. We're going to play a clip of him, like how he's going to just psych out Lou Ferrigno so he can win. Basically, he's just going to be like, I'm going to convince Lou Ferrigno to lose. And if he's in shape, I'm going to convince him to lose. And if he's not in shape, it won't take as much convincing and he'll still lose. So that's one of the jerky things he does, and he does psych him out over breakfast. We're going to play the clip where he talks about how he's going to psych him out. But he also talks about how, like, 2 months before a competition, his dad died, and his mom wanted him to fly home for the funeral, and he's just like, no, I can't. I've got a competition in 2 months.
He really coldly says that.
And he talks about how he, like, can't be involved with girls or can't be involved with anything that would remotely, like, disturb his emotions, because if it disturbs his emotions, he's not going to be able to win. And that, like, he prioritizes this winning above all else, and that makes him look really selfish and really terrible.
He addresses that in the Raw Iron documentary.
What does he say in there?
He just says, I was not going to present myself in this documentary as being vulnerable, even though, of course, I was vulnerable and I was scared and I was all of these things.
Why?
And he regrets the not going to his dad's funeral and stuff.
Do you think that is almost like a smart replay of the, like, you know what I mean? Because he knows how he's come across in this documentary, and he wants to pretend is the wrong word, but he needs to have that other side to be likable. So he presents that other side when given the opportunity to. Like, I wouldn't put that past Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I don't know. I've seen a few different interviews with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I can't tell if he's a complete sociopath or if he's got a little bit of goodness in him. You know
what I mean? He might be a sociopath.
He might just be a total evil person. I don't know.
He, like, is divorced from his wife now, too, right? What's the thing, too, with his illegitimate child? He had an illegitimate child.
He denied it, but the child looked exactly like him.
Arnold. It's like a Hispanic version of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. Just looks identical to him. Okay, let's play this quote where he talks about how he's going to psychologically manipulate Lou Ferrigno into losing. And then we'll come back and finish up talking about Pumping Iron. What do you think?
Yes.
Attaboy.
You have to do everything possible to win, you know, no matter what. At the day of the contest, if he comes in his best shape and he's equally as good as I am, or if, let's say, he's a few percent better as I am, I spend with him one night. I go downstairs and book us together in a room, you know, to help him for tomorrow's contest. And that night, he will never forget. I will mix him up. He will come so ready to South Africa, so strong. But by the time the night is over, the next morning, he will be ready to lose. I mean, I will just talk him into that. That's no problem to do, you know? And so all those things, you know, are available. And so if they're available, you might as well use them. So that's why it doesn't matter if he comes in shape or out of shape. If he comes out of shape, at least has less hassle from me, you know. And if he's in shape, fine. I hope he is.
But you couldn't. I like listening to him talk.
Yeah, I do. He is sociopathic. And then he goes on to talk about who's his buddy that he trains with, like the shorter Italian guy who's in the under 200
it's like
class?
Carlos something.
Yeah, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's like, what about this guy? And he's like, that guy is a child.
And they're best friends.
Yeah, and I am like his father. He will do what I tell him. Yeah. And he's like, I can give him good advices or bad advices.
Yeah, advices is a good word.
Yeah, it comes up. I kind of wanted to play it, but it was going to be too long a clip to get into the advices part.
The thing about this documentary is it's almost not even a documentary. It's like, you know how reality TV isn't reality TV?
Yeah.
This is almost that.
Like it's Arnold presenting.
So many things are staged.
That's fair.
Just the way that the duality is framed.
Here's a question.
Okay.
Arnold moved to America when he was 20 and has been living in America ever since, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
How has his English gotten no better in 40 years?
When you just start...
If you get
to a certain level of success with a certain level of ability of speaking the English language...
There's no incentive to get any better?
Yeah, you don't need to just, oh, I need to be better in English. No, you don't. You've just won all of the monies.
You're in every movie, yeah, in spite of that fact.
You've won all the championships and all of the movies, and you don't need to improve at all.
Does Lou Ferrigno have speaking lines in the movies that he's in, or is he just the Hulk?
He's just the Hulk because he has a speech impediment.
He was deaf as a child.
Yeah.
And is like still has like hearing issues that have sort of created a speech impediment. I was just curious because every time he talked in the movie, like at first I didn't know that. So I was just like, why is he talking so weird? Yeah. But I'm just curious if his lines are speaking lines in the movies that he's in or if he just like is big and smashes stuff.
I think he's just big and smashes stuff. He's not Bruce Banner.
Okay. Who's the Clark Kent of the Hulk?
I don't think he's Bruce Banner in the Hulk.
Clark Kent is to Superman as Bruce Banner is to the Hulk. Okay. Just making sure.
People would know that.
What are those things called? I don't know that. Huh. What are those kind of things called?
Superheroes.
Yeah. Good. They're on SAT tests, which you would not have had to write. Let's finish up Pumping Iron. You're shaking your head.
It's fine.
It's called America. What do you want to figure out?
Do you know who Bud Cord is?
Nope.
Bud Cord is Harold in Harold and Maude.
Okay.
Have you seen Harold and Maude?
No, but I've seen the start of it. I know who you're talking about.
He was in this movie. He was cut out.
He was not a bodybuilder.
He was not a bodybuilder, but he was just this. But like Bud Cord goes to the Gold Gym and works out with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and there's just he spends a day with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Arnold Schwarzenegger just shows him different exercises and stuff. And
he's like a tiny guy, right?
He's a super tiny guy.
Okay.
He's Harold and Harold and Maude.
He's like Jay Baruchel sized dude working out with Arnold.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he probably saw the dailies or something, and he's just like, I don't want to be in this movie. Take me out of this movie. And then they did. He gave his money back.
Really?
Yeah.
Why did he want out so bad? Because he thought it was going to be stupid?
I just think he was just like, this is stupid and it's not working.
Okay.
Like, who cares that Bud Cord is working out with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Which is Dre. Like, who cares?
We looked this up. It's 7 years between when this comes out and his, like, film career really sort of takes off, which is interesting to me. I thought it was sort of immediately, but...
Well, when did Conan come out?
Conan's 82.
This came out in 77.
But it's from the 75.
It was filmed in 75.
Okay, so it comes out in 77. But yeah, it's like... It wasn't an immediate, like, thing from the end of this movie to his film career taking off. It's sort of like... And Conan was big, but it wasn't... It was like... It's not Terminator level kind of thing. Terminator was like his...
But a movie like that might take a couple of years to...
To percolate?
Well, to go through production.
Yeah. Fair enough. So maybe he was, like, in Conan in 80 and knew he'd sort of, like, rounded the corner.
I think wasn't he in another movie before that?
He was in a couple other movies, but I don't know them. And there was the one you talked about, something set in New York where all his like lines were overdubbed and stuff like that.
I wasn't talking about that. I don't know what that movie is.
Someone knew something. P.S. We're going to watch Predator, not for the next show, but just generally on Saturday night, but you're not going to be here.
Yeah, and I'm not. I wouldn't have watched it anyway.
Why wouldn't you? It's for Carl's birthday. We're watching Predator.
I would do it for Carl. Yeah.
We're going to get a projector. We're getting a sheet. We're going to set up some really loud speakers, and we're going to watch Predator as big and loud as we possibly can.
I'm more of a Commando kind of guy.
The like scenes with Alyssa Milano in the pink sweater at the start of Commando? A1. I like movies like that, too, that start so fast. Like, it's basically like, I'm out of the game, and then it's like him home with his like his daughter, and then immediately the bad guys are just in his home kidnapping his daughter. Like, there's no like build up to his... like. What's the word? Involvement with the bad guys.
Yeah, cut to the action, please.
Yeah. Just get this plot part out of the way so Arnold can start killing everything. I read this thing today, too, about the new Liam Neeson movies are just called Liam Neeson Kills Everyone. So NLKE is like his his new thing. And he's got the new one, A Walk Among the Tombstones, where he just kills everyone. And they were talking about how, like, in Taken, it's his daughter. And so he has to go get her back. In Taken 2, it's his ex-wife. So he's got to go get her back. And in this one, it's like somebody who had wrong done to him. So he's got to go like fight everybody on his behalf. But like, how far would Liam Neeson go away from his own like personal circle of people?
For a Klondike bar.
Yeah, to kill everyone. So like if it was his annoying neighbor that he didn't really like that much in the first place, but that guy was kidnapped by bad guys, would Liam Neeson go and kill everyone in order to bring that man back?
Who would Liam Neeson kill for a Klondike bar?
He would kill any number of Albanian sex trafficking people.
Jesus.
He doesn't care.
Right.
He doesn't care. Have you seen Flight? No. Kills almost everyone in that movie, too. Liam Neeson will kill.
Each time you watch a Liam Neeson movie, I watch My Dinner with Andre over and over again.
He's maybe going to be in a new Scorsese movie. I know we moved totally on to Liam Neeson. We should get off that. But Liam Neeson is my Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What's the best Arnold movie?
You're not going to agree with this. One of my favorites that I think is legit and holds up and is actually pretty funny. Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah, I'm not going to agree with
that. Have you seen Kindergarten Cop recently?
Yeah, I saw it when I was in kindergarten.
Oh, my God. No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
When? So not recently, though. When have you seen Kindergarten Cop recently?
Probably when it came out in the early 90s.
It's.
I think I watched it in a hotel in America.
It's relatively legit, man.
I appreciate that. There's a lot of planes going overhead.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you think that's being picked up in the microphone?
Yeah, I totally think it is. I encourage you to watch Kindergarten Cop again. I would also... I like that the two... Aside from Kindergarten Cop, which
How
is sort
you
of...
pick over Terminator 2?
Just hear me out. I like Kindergarten Cop. Over the two like main non-action movies that Arnold is in, both defy medical science.
Jingle All the Way.
Junior.
Oh, yeah.
Where he gives birth.
Right.
And Twins, where he is the twin brother of Danny DeVito.
Can we just talk about Junior for a second?
I've never seen Junior, but go...
So Junior pairs up Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger again.
Oh, Danny DeVito's in Junior?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Because when
when you've got a winning
the magic's working,
when
the
you're
magic's
winning,
working.
You keep winning.
Yeah. We both said bad.
Keep going.
Can you imagine that pitch?
We've got a short guy and a massive guy, and the massive guy's pregnant.
Instead of them being twin brothers, though, Arnold Schwarzenegger's pregnant with a baby. Green light.
Yeah. I think that pretty much like late 80s to early 90s, like late 80s to mid 90s, anything with Arnold was greenlit. Yeah. If you had Arnold, you had a green light.
Jingle All the Way. Did you ever watch that? Sinbad.
I tried to watch the first 20 minutes of Jingle All the Way and it was excruciatingly bad and I turned it off.
True Lies, the best movie title ever.
I've never seen True Lies.
True Lies.
It's smart. It's
lies,
really smart.
Not lies.
Any final thoughts on Pumping Iron before we move on to Paul McCartney? And Paul McCartney and Wings and their album Band on the Run.
I think we just really need to stress the point that this is a very funny movie and a very good movie.
Yeah, it's worth watching for sure. I had a really good time.
It's really staged. Lou Ferrigno's father barely ever actually had a presence in his bodybuilding career.
Really?
Like that stuff was all sort of pushed.
It's interesting that they staged it so much. I mean, it makes sense, but...
Like, I mean, you can't make a documentary without bias, but this was just so obvious.
Yeah.
But it made it good. Like, it just made the movie better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need to know exactly what bodybuilding's like. Everybody knows bodybuilding's ridiculous.
I think the movie succeeds to...
Apologies to all the bodybuilders listening to our show right now.
Because, like I said, it's the anti-documentary. Like, you're cheering for Arnold and hating him at the same time in a really strange way. It's like... It's not like Breaking Bad, because that's obviously a different thing, but it's weird to like recognize that the main guy who seems so nice is somewhat villainous, but you still want him to win, kind of. Like, I never that's was true. Sitting there being like, I want Lou Ferrigno to win this competition.
Yeah. I don't care. You're all just meat.
Yeah.
And you know what the best part, the best irony about bodybuilding is?
What's that?
Is these people get up on stage and like try to look as big as they possibly can. But I guarantee you, the second that you look at a bodybuilder, the first thing you immediately look at is their penis. How small their penis is.
Yeah, looks in proportion to everything else.
So they try to make their whole body as big as possible, and then you just go right for the penis.
Well, I know what you were looking at.
Yeah, well, we all talked about it. I don't know. I looked at his penis.
All right, we're going to play Paul McCartney's Band on the Run off the album Band on the Run. Then we're
going
move
out
on.
With style.
Going to move on. I don't know if that's called style. Here we go.
Penis.
These four walls, sent inside forever.
All right, I got a lot to say about this, and I think that you do too, so we should just kind of...
Let's just say that song's so good.
It's good. I agree. We gotta start right at the beginning. So, Maddie pointed this out to me one time, but that song clearly to me is him trying to emulate John Lennon, which he did for a long time afterwards, where he'd sort of like... John Lennon with like Happiness is a Warm Gun and a couple other songs was the first of them to do that sort of like... mini suites, yeah, like a collage of songs, and then Paul McCartney sort of took it to its extreme, like at the end of Abbey Road, that was a lot of his doing, and then also like in these kind of songs. Second piece, I hate Paul McCartney characters.
What do you mean characters?
Rocky Raccoon, Sailor Sam, the Jailer Man.
You don't like Rocky Raccoon?
I like the song Rocky Raccoon, but the sort of like alliterative nonsense characters that he always makes
up. He's not good at writing.
Okay, which is brings me to my third point. And this is like my big thing about Paul McCartney. He is an unadulterated genius. He's, I don't know if unadulterated is the right word, but he is clearly the most musical member of the Beatles. I think he writes these songs in his sleep.
He's a craftsman.
Yeah. He doesn't, and he also is like the most talented arranger of the Beatles. He would stay up late at night, like making sure the bass parts were perfect. He cared a lot. He was like, he was the best musician in the Beatles. Clearly, probably the best songwriter ultimately in from the perspective of how easily he wrote really great pop songs. But because of that, I feel like something is always hollow in his songs.
It feels like there's very little purpose behind them.
Yeah, like because it's so good already, yeah. And he didn't have to try, he's never been like, well, I should really write some like really great lyrics, or this song should mean anything at all.
Like, what are the ideas he's provoking?
None, yeah, zero.
Yeah.
In any song that he's ever written, what is Rocky Raccoon about?
There's just like expertly crafted songs that are hollow, you're right.
Yeah.
Or they're like paper thin, like everyone's. I mean, in the Beatles, he hit on some songs that felt...
Like Hey Jude has urgency. Like a sentiment there, and it was like about John Lennon's
song. Or like Helter Skelter is a beast.
Yeah, but even Helter Skelter, I feel like, and this is sort of because he was so good at songwriting, and like he was such a competitive person, like Helter Skelter isn't a song that he was like... Like I never feel like his inspiration is from a pure place inside his heart where he's just like, this is awesome. Let's like, I've got this. He talks about how people criticized his songs or the Beatles generally for being too soft. So he went out and deliberately tried to write the heaviest thing he could write.
Yeah.
And Helter Skelter comes out and it's great, but it's also like, you don't feel any emotion. Like I like Helter Skelter. Don't get me wrong, but I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I know that fact, and that fact taints that song for me, because it's just Paul McCartney proving that he can write the best heavy song.
And he also relied, he always relied heavily on his own nostalgia. So he'll just do like "Oh Darling" throwback, and there's like lots of songs like this on this record.
Yeah, this record seems like sort of a tour de force of Beatles, like of previous Beatles material,
but almost. Also just lesser than the Beatles.
Stuff. Yeah,
it's like I'm never upset when you put this record on. It's such a pleasant sounding record. It's fun to listen to. "Band on the Run" is a great song. You can't deny that.
Can I make another point? Yeah. Kind of that goes back to what we're saying. Clearly, the John Lennon and Paul McCartney did really good things for each other, because John Lennon, I think, would never have let like a lot of these cheesy lines fly, or he, like Paul McCartney, would have made a mistake, but John Lennon would be like, that actually sounds cooler. Like, I think John Lennon's cool radar was way higher than Paul McCartney's cool radar. But John Lennon's material post the Beatles sounds a little bit hollow too, in a different way.
Not Plastic Ono Band.
Hear me out, man. I think the arrangements are kind of weak. On, like, Imagine is a great song.
Imagine, yeah.
Sure. I'm just using that as an example. But it's a little... I think if Paul McCartney had been involved in Imagine, it would be a greater song. I think that he would have figured out neat arrangement tricks or small little things to do musically to make it more interesting.
Maybe. I mean, Imagine's just Imagine.
Like, you like John Lennon better, but...
I don't even care about Imagine. Like, that's not what I'm talking about when I talk about... Like, I'm talking about the
give me your best post-Beatles John Lennon song.
I really like God, even though it's sort of heavy-handed in the.
Give me content. Your best post-Beatles John Lennon song that most people know. Like Instant Karma.
Maybe Instant Karma. I like Watching the Wheels.
Watching the Wheels is really great. I just think that they did a lot of good stuff for each other, and that John Lennon's post-Beatles career would have been better had Paul McCartney.
Have you listened to Plastic Ono?
Yes, I've listened to Plastic Ono Band.
It's a great record. There's not really any hits, but I guess the best or. Look at Me is a great song.
Okay. I'm less familiar with it.
Mother. So and like that whole album is like him like basically visiting the psychiatrist.
How good are all the Yoko Ono songs on
Working Class Hero?
On Double Fantasy?
I don't think automatically bad. Like, you're laughing.
I think they're pretty automatically bad. But
I'm interested in Yoko Ono. I pitched Yoko Ono to you for the show, and I still think we should do Yoko Ono sometime.
Okay.
Are you not interested in Yoko Ono as a thing? She has cred.
Okay, let's move on.
Why?
Because I want to talk about this record that we're talking about.
Okay, but this is peripheral.
Peripheral. I don't care about Yoko Ono. I've never listened to any Yoko Ono song and been remotely like, this is good, or I can see value in this. It's always just a shrieking like thing happening.
Yeah, are you not interested in something other than pop?
Look, man, I can get down with it. Yoko Ono is just too far gone for me.
That's fair.
Let's talk about this record, a couple things. One, I think that Band on the Run was written before, like about a year before they went to go record this record. But totally, random's the wrong word, but his band all did just quit on him right before they went to...
The drummer and the guitarist.
Lagos in Nigeria.
Nigeria, yeah.
To record this record, which is also a weird choice. And I think this goes to like the sort of... ignorance and like innocence of Paul McCartney, who's just like, I want to go record in Africa. Where's there a studio in Africa? And they were like, well, we have one in Lagos, Nigeria. And he was like, that sounds perfect. And yeah. Just went there and didn't know it was like a heavy-handed military dictatorship.
He got mugged.
Yeah, he got mugged at knife point. He like suffered like some sort of weird like bronchial collapse.
Attacked.
That Linda McCartney thought was a heart attack and collapsed. Like, it did not, like, they had to like live an hour away from the studio at this nice sort of like little like, I mean, I don't know if white community is the wrong word, but like a sort of
he
safe
went to a country club.
Yeah, a safe like for Westerners community, and then would travel like an hour like in a convoy to the studio every day, and then back to this one place kind of thing.
Yeah,
was accosted by Fela Kuti, who thought he was down there trying to steal like the African sound. And then had to bring Fela Kuti to the studio and be like, look, it sounds really Western and it's cool. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Talk to Paul McCartney 15 years from now. Or Paul Simon, rather.
Yeah. So all those things are pretty interesting about this record. It's also interesting because like basically he had that other guy who's playing rhythm guitar and Linda McCartney, who's clearly playing, like probably, they give
she's,
her credit.
She's playing the photography.
Yeah, she's playing Paul's wife. Which, like, I don't want to sound...
She sings.
She's... Have you seen that YouTube video of her isolated?
No, it's bad.
Yeah, it's super bad. You can... It's a song Band on the Run. You can look it up, and it's Wings playing, and they've done, like, the similar thing to the Courtney Love thing that came out recently.
Right.
Where they've, like, sort of, like, soloed her vocal, and it's just brutal.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
Paul McCartney is my least favorite Beatle.
That's fair. He's the least likable for sure.
Well, I mean, it depends on what you like. I mean, he's the most jovial.
Yeah, but he seems so smug and weird. No, but
he,
keep
he
going.
He's smug and weird. He always sticks his tongue out and weird stuff like that.
Yeah.
He's really cheeky.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
But...
He's like the Arnold Schwarzenegger of the Beatles. I'm not even being that flippant, but keep going.
When he does his pumps?
He just, like... He's like the guy who just clearly knows they're destined for greatness and is in love with his own greatness.
Yeah, he does come off as smug. Saying that, I like this album. I like Ram a lot more. Have you ever listened to Ram?
I've listened to Ram a bit.
Ram's better. I just really like the idea of him finding marital bliss with Linda McCartney and just living on a Scottish farm and writing these...
Absurd songs.
Writing these, either a silly song or just like ho-hum, who cares, love songs, effortlessly, just because... There's nothing at stake.
Yeah.
He's just good at writing songs. He has found happiness. Like, I just, like, that makes me kind of feel good. Like,
yeah.
I like the idea of Paul McCartney hanging out in a farm with a huge beard and a sheepdog and his family and kids running around.
And just writing great
pop writing
songs
with his friends and forming a band with his friends.
Yeah, I think that's, there's something
nice about it. It's like, there's something nice about it. And there is, like, there are good songs, but, like, pretty much even Paul McCartney songs, like, I almost, as much as I love Man on the Run, I could say I love it. Like, I really enjoy it when it's on the album. I almost always prefer to listen to his Beatles songs.
Yeah.
With the like exception of maybe Band on the Run and maybe like Every Night or Temporary Secretary.
Can I put on Jet? Because I think that's also an exception.
Jet's good. Jet's have you heard incredible. Temporary Secretary?
I have heard Temporary Secretary. It's pretty weird, isn't it?
Really weird, yeah.
Paul McCartney's kind of... He's the hardest Beatle to deal with, for sure. John Lennon's an angry person and can be a jerk, but at least I feel like that makes him interesting. Paul McCartney's not necessarily interesting to me. He's just in love with his own, like...
Piano up his nose.
Yeah. Should we play another song from the record? And
play Jet.
Okay, I want to play Jet. Yeah. So let's get Jet on, and we'll come back and we'll talk about it in a minute, and then we'll keep talking about old P-Dog. We're grooving a little bit right
yeah,
there.
Yeah,
right?
Jet.
Yeah, Jet's a good song. All these songs are good. That's my...
But like Bluebird is just like a nothing, you know. It's like a good song, pleasant to listen to.
Mamunia. I don't like that one.
It's fine.
I can deal without it.
Yeah.
I think that's the beef with Paul McCartney. I always like a Paul McCartney song when it's on, but it... And it always, like, the song is stuck in my head, but it's always annoying.
You didn't go see him when he came to Halifax.
I did not. I had to do Retro Night that night, and I was super disappointed because A, I didn't get to go to Paul McCartney, and B, no one came to Retro Night because they were all at Paul McCartney.
And C, Paul McCartney was great.
Yeah, I heard it was really good.
He was so good.
I wanted to talk about something, but I can't remember what. Oh, did you know that... Sorry. I want to give, first of all, a quick shout-out to Jeff Emmerich, who is the... who's not... I don't even know if he's alive, and is definitely not listening to our show. So shout out's the wrong word, but he is the engineer on this record and was the engineer on Revolver, Sgt. Pepper's, the start of the White Album before he quit because the sessions were too hostile, and Abbey Road, and is a very unsung hero of all those sessions. Did stuff with like tape recording that could never have been done. And I very much encourage any Beatles fan to read Here, There, and Everywhere, My Life Recording the Beatles by Jeff Emmerich. It's super interesting, especially if you're remotely into recording, because then he talks about all these tricks they did with tape and how they made tape work and stuff. And he even goes there, and the studio was a total mess, and he had to like get it all together and like get the right gear so that they could actually record there, because they had like one tape machine that barely worked and like three microphones.
Everyone can wake up now. Daryl's done talking about Jeff Emmerich.
Jeff Emmerich, man. Just look him up. He's cool. That book, I honestly would loan it to
look
you.
Look him up on Snapchat.
Snapchat?
Just send him a search on the Friendster.
So now that my shout out to Jeff Emmerich is done, what would you like to say that's so interesting about Paul McCartney and the Beatles?
What's the best Paul McCartney song?
As a Beatle? Or, man, I'm not gonna be able to do this right now. This is like a seriously long debate. I would maybe put, I don't know. What's your favorite?
All right, go post-Beatles.
Maybe 1985?
Have you heard Every Night?
I don't think so. I'm not that familiar with Paul McCartney's post-Beatles career. I know.
How would you grade his post? What happened to the Beatles? I know what happened, but why couldn't they just be consistent after being so consistent?
Because I think they brought out the best parts of each other. This is what I'm trying to say.
But it's like such great.
The filter that exists within a band context then gets removed when you go out on your own, and because you're like rich enough to, and you. Like can you surround yourself with yes men, do you know what I mean, who are all just being like, yeah, Paul, Mamounia is a great song, let's roll. Do it, hit the tape. But like John Lennon would have just been like, no effing way. Even like, this is an interesting, it's not that interesting, and maybe you're gonna get mad, but Obladi, they couldn't get that right forever, and Paul McCartney made them run through take after take.
I love Obladi too.
So, and it wasn't working.
People hate that song,
and it wasn't working. I like Obladi too. And then basically, John Lennon was like just so angry about having to do this song forever, and he was just like, it should sound like this, and did that piano part at the beginning. I can't remember. And that was way faster than they'd been playing it up until that point, just hammered it out, and then like they went right into it playing at that speed, and it just clicked for everyone. And then that's how they did Obladi. But without John Lennon there to do that and be like, your song effing sucks the way it is right now, we need to make it kick butt. whatever. Then it's sort of like in the post-Beatles era, of course. You know what I'm trying to say. That's why
I still sort of feel like they should have, like John Lennon should have had more than one classic album and a smattering of songs after the Beatles. Paul McCartney should have had more than two and a half pleasurable albums and a smattering of songs. George Harrison should have had more than that three disc barf that he did. That was,
you don't like that?
I think it was called, wasn't it called, See, Look What I Can Do?
See, I'm a guy too.
I can do stuff. Three records.
Most people think All Things Must Pass is great, but we don't have to go down that road.
It doesn't have to be three records long.
I've not listened to All Things Must Pass in its entirety, so I can't pretend that I know whether it should or should not be three discs long. I agree. The Beatles were better than the Beatles were on their own.
And Ringo Starr had Photograph.
And Ringo Starr was Shiny Time Station.
Yeah, jinx. Oh my God.
And he had cool earrings, and he plays on The Last Waltz. He appears on The Last Waltz as a drummer. I think Ringo probably had the funnest post-Beatles career. He just hung out with people.
He was a fun dude.
Yeah, I think he was probably the funnest guy. Did you hear about, the wrong word, but during the filming of Hard Day's Night was like right when they all got kind of into like smoking weed, and Ringo and George used to just sneak off all the time and get high and then come back to do all the shooting parts, and that's why they just are atrocious in the movie, and like they can't ski and everything's just... Basically, every scene with them is a disaster because they were high 100% of the time of the shooting. And they also were still like not so... Like, I think that John and Paul would, like, after the shooting, go be serious and like work on new songs for the next record. And Ringo obviously wasn't working on new songs for the next record and kind of had a PIC in George Harrison. That stands for Partner in Crime.
Got it. Well, do you think... Here's the final question. Well, how much time do we have?
We got about 5 minutes to talk, like finish this up, talk about what we're going to talk about next week, and...
What are we going to talk about next? Oh, yeah, we already talked about
that. Yeah.
Do you think this album was written, recorded, and performed by Paul McCartney?
Yes.
Well, wasn't he dead?
Oh, man. So bad. But you...
Paul is dead.
Paul is dead. Paul died. That's why he's in bare feet.
That's why he's bare feet on Abbey Road.
Did I tell you that I went to Abbey Road? For real? I've been to Abbey Road?
Yeah, you've told me that.
Do you want to hear another thing, too? The Beatles hated Abbey Road. They had to record there. They didn't like recording
there.
They
were contractually obliged to?
Yeah. That was EMI's studio, and so they had to record there. But it's like a... Gross is the wrong word because it's so legendary and it's Abbey Road, but you go in it and it's just a massive, it looks like the crummiest high school classroom with just enormous ceilings.
Right.
Like it's not a nice place. It has no like ambiance. It's not a pleasurable place to be.
What's with all these legendary studios that are just like crummy, like Sound City?
Yeah, Sound City though I think is like crummy in a fun way. Abbey Road isn't fun. Like the Beatles like kind of hated it there. It used to cause trouble all the time in the halls. All part of the Jeff Emmerich book that I think you should read. So next week we're going to talk about...
Clueless.
Clueless we're going to do. And we're going to do the Ramones' first album.
Beat on the Brat.
The Ramones.
Beat on the Brat. Beat on the
Who's
Brat.
Who's your favorite Ramone?
The bass... Dee Dee.
Yeah, Dee Dee. That was my favorite too.
Of course.
53rd and 3rd, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we don't have to fight about that next week. Yeah. Should we end the show with 1985?
Sure.
Do you want to say any final words about Paul McCartney... and the Beatles, and Linda McCartney, and John Lennon, and George Harrison, and Ringo Starr, and Eric Clapton, and Layla.
We miss you, and Paul McCartney, keep swinging for the stars. You miss 100% of the shots you don't make.
So helpful. Oops.
Don't play that.
You don't want to play... What's that song called?
It's called...
Mrs. Vanderbilt? Hey, Hope!
It's called... These lyrics are placeholders.
It's called... I was planning on coming back to this.
Yeah.
All right, this is 1985.